Do you like horror movies? Do you like cocktails? Do you like cocktails while you watch horror movies?
Oh boy, do we have a surprise for you. Cocktails from the Crypt is finally here. You can get a copy of our new recipe book, 60 Terrifying Concoctions, inspired by your favorite horror movies, right now, wherever books are sold.
Learn how to make the Drag Mai Tai to Hell, the Negroni Nomicon.
Surprise your friends with a Jason X-inspired slushie.
Get sloshed drinking a Texas Chainsaw Margarita, or six.
And why not blow your brains at the back of your head with the Killbot Kamikaze? Thank you. Have a nice day.
You can learn how to drink. You can learn how to make these drinks and more in Cocktails from the Crypt, available wherever books are sold, like Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Okay, this infomercial bit has been really fun, but seriously, one, thank you so much to everybody who has pre-ordered a copy of Cocktails from the Crypt. And if you are looking for a gift for the horror person in your life and you have no idea what else to get them, Cocktails from the Crypt is here to help them punch up every Friday movie night and turn it into a graveyard smash.
Plus, the cover's embossed and it looks great on your coffee table.
No, oh, Kim's still stuck in infomercial land, guys. I'm sorry. I think she's gone forever.
It's purple.
You can get Cocktails from the Crypt right now, wherever books are sold. Or you can head over to nofspodcast.com/go. There's links for everything.
Ready to shoot your shot? Log into BetMGM every day and play the new Fast Break basketball game for your chance to win prizes. All you need to do is log into BetMGM, head to the promotions page, and fire up Fast Break to find yourself on the b-ball court ready to make a play. Choose to pass the ball to the shooting guard or small forward, or take it to the rim yourself and go for a slam dunk. If you score a basket, you'll win a prize like a boost token, $50 bonus bet, or bonus spins. If you miss, just log in tomorrow and try again. Play Fast Break for your daily shot at boost tokens, bonus bets, or bonus spins. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21+. Plus, this U.S. promo offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER throughout U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona, 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts, 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico, or visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.
You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to Nightmare on Film Street, the horror movie podcast for the casually obsessed. I'm Kimmy.
I'm John.
And welcome back! It feels like it's been forever since we've spoken to you guys.
It's been a minute, yeah.
And we're kicking off this new format, this new season of Nightmare on Film Street, with the thrilling, the super exciting, and definitely not a sad, sad downer, Fire Walk With Me.
That's right. For super sad, sad reasons, obviously, in the time between the last episode of the podcast and this one, we have lost one of the most important people in modern cinematic history. R.I.P. David Lynch. We miss you very much. We had a whole bunch of movies that we planned on talking about in this season of the show, but given the grave, grave news that we've all had time to mourn...
We have not had time.
We're trying to do it tonight, live on podcast. We are here to talk about David Lynch's Fire Walk With Me.
I could really use a tell-all right about now.
A tell-all?
Yeah. You know, when people tell all about their weird movies and what they mean.
Oh, yeah. Well, I got good news for you, Kim. You know, like David Lynch.
Do you have answers?
I have nothing for you. I've seen Twin Peaks. I'm obsessed with it. In a way that I just think about it all the time. And I'm constantly trying to piece it together in my mind. But I have not done... I have not watched the show 18 times. I have not injected it into my veins. But I'm always, always trying to pull it apart and piece it back together again. And hopefully we can find some answers here tonight.
Okay, so Fire Walk With Me is a prequel that came out after the second season or in between the first and second season.
Fire Walk With Me came out after Twin Peaks was canceled. It's worth noting that Twin Peaks was a fucking sensation.
Mm-hmm.
And David Lynch left the show shortly after the second season, in the middle of the second season, because he was very unhappy with how it was going and what the TV executives essentially were making him do with the show. Essentially, he never wanted to, quote unquote, solve the murder of Laura Palmer. That mm-hmm. was never supposed to be something that they got to the bottom of, but they pressured them to do it. Too many cooks in the kitchen, and he just fucking left. And, you know, the second season...
This is not my art anymore.
The second half of the second season is really something strange. I should also say that he went and made Wild at Heart, got incredible praise at Cannes. Like, it's movie of the year at the Cannes Film Festival. Like, finally, the art crowd has accepted David Lynch. And then after Twin Peaks is over, he comes back to Cannes with Fire Walk With Me, and they hated it. Would it shock you to believe the critics didn't get it? and they just thought that he was up his own butt?
It is a very cruel and raunchy movie, though, so that might have just put people's guards up.
Maybe.
In terms of, like, we don't care for the metaphors because we can't get past the how mean you are to Laura Palmer.
there's maybe that. Surely there were people in the audience that hadn't seen Twin Peaks and they were just like, what the fuck is this? I thought I was coming here to get answers. I'm leaving with more questions than I started with. None of it makes sense.
That is, I think, the most interesting thing about Fire Walk With Me is that it's unlike most, you know, expansion properties in that you cannot watch this having not seen the series at all.
It's definitely,
I mean, unless you're planning on watching this because you want to watch it in some kind of like chronological order and then dive into the season. But this movie presents all of the facts that take two seasons to lay out.
Yeah. Like, you would kind of ruin the show if you watch this first.
Yeah, and it's a reverse engineered product. Like, it is doing that thing that you kind of hate.
I do hate it.
Where it's setting up all of the strings and the ties.
Yeah.
Like, when she gives her diary with the pages ripped out to her Meals on Wheels bro. Like, that stuff feels like it's all just tying back into the show.
Harold, that's the name. So I blanked for a second. I know, and I get it. Like, when we cover prequels on the podcast, I'm pretty critical on them. It's just like, what is the point of this? Like, I know what all the beats are going to be. Why are we here? I do think this movie adds different texture to a lot of that stuff.
So I was going to say, you didn't let me finish my point.
Okay.
My point was, strangely, even though I think you best enjoy Fire Walk With Me, having absorbed all of the seasons and meditated on them,
yeah.
And like, I think this, and I don't know what this is, and I think this, uh-huh. And then you get to like stew in Laura Palmer's world, it might be the best story of the Twin Peaks saga. Just what Laura Palmer's going through.
Well,
I'm so engaged with that. I think that's the strongest storyline of all of the Twin Peaks stuff I've seen.
Oh, absolutely. I think David Lynch knew that too. And like that's what, and Mark Frost. Like let's not forget that Twin Peaks is David Lynch and Mark Frost. It's not just David Lynch. That's why you don't get her as much in the show. Like everybody, like Laura Palmer,
she's this
is,
enigma. Like you can't,
yeah.
you get a photograph of her.
Exactly.
But I think there's so much testament to Cheryl Lee, who plays Laura Palmer, because she was basically cast to be a corpse and a photograph.
Basically.
And they were like, wow, she can actually act.
Yeah.
I'm not saying because
I don't think she can act. I'm saying I'm sure they had other plans for her.
No, so I was reading that they were recording these just like scenes of her with Donna for like flashbacks, whatever. And they were like, oh, Dead Girl can act. They like they did more stuff with her in the season.
She's incredible.
Because she was so good.
Yeah.
This movie is phenomenal and she is acting the shit out of it.
Right.
It's so good. It's such a great spotlight piece for her. She's just so watchable.
She still fucking got it, too. Like, you watch Twin Peaks The Return, you're like, good God. Like, the talent never left. It didn't go anywhere.
Like, just the casting on, like, the complicated pain behind this character's eyes.
Fuck yeah.
You're just like, wow. This actress has been through some shit or she needs some Oscars immediately.
She's absolutely astounding in this movie. They give her some incredible dialogue. It's very soap opera-y the way that the show is soap opera-y. Like, there's some over-the-top shit. But, like, that scene where her and not Donna are hanging out and talking about...
What's it like in space? Do you slow down or do you speed up?
If you're falling in space, do you slow down? Do you eventually slow down or do you just keep going faster and faster? That is fucking incredible and heartbreaking. And you see the pain of like 8 lifetimes wash over her.
Yeah. Well, and then there's also that really cool story device that I think you and I are both super suckers for, that like faded thing
where
people who are going to have tragic ends know it their whole lives and they feel it their whole lives. And that's why they live these chaotic lives that cause them to die early. It's like this self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah,
they know and so they do and so it happens.
The Donnie Darko problem.
The Donnie Darko prophecy.
Yeah, it's a lot of Twin Peaks feels, and a lot of David Lynch stuff, but especially Twin Peaks and definitely Fire Walk With Me, feels like you are being inducted into this secret society of pain. Like, everybody in here, it's faded and she can see it on their faces and they can recognize it in her. And
it is true. They all kind of see it in her. They're like, why are you like resisting my love? Why are you resisting my violence? Why are you resisting my friendship?
Uh-huh.
She is on a world of her own and she never actually lets anybody fully in. There's so many versions of her and it's a different one for every person.
And like as a character, she is 11 different people.
Mm-hmm.
And Cheryl Lee does every single one of them perfectly. And then also in some key scenes, all 11 of them at the exact same fucking time.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. Like, I can't say enough about how good she is in this
movie. And just like that phenomenal line when Donna and her are hanging out on the couch talking about like what it's like to be in space.
Yeah.
The line when she's talking to James, like in the basement of the school where they hook up.
Oh my God.
Like a turkey in the corn.
I'm the dumbest turkey and lost in the corn.
Gobble. Gobble, gobble. That's the thing that drives me insane about David Lynch is he can do such like profound, really amazing stuff that I understand. And then seconds later, we're like, there's a woman with a log. And, like, there's a guy with one arm who's like running. And you're like, where did you come from?
Like truly, and like this is obviously played for comedy, but the best sort of like snow globe of what Twin Peaks is.
The
random monkey is the best description of Twin Peaks is in The Simpsons when Homer's watching it and it's a guy slow dancing with a horse in a field, but there's also traffic lights above them and he's like, this is the smartest show on television. I have no idea what's happening. Okay, so let's assume you've made it this far into the podcast, and you've never seen Twin Peaks. Can you give everybody just a quick little log line on what Twin Peaks is?
It's crime.
Because we started to go deep real fast.
It's crime TV, but like you're watching it at the bottom of a pond.
What? I mean, this is an okay description for Twin Peaks, yeah.
Like, there's so much distortion in it, and it's like a true crime melodrama, but it's filtered through the mind of somebody who doesn't want to tell it to you linearly.
Okay, it's also a soap opera murder mystery, or I should say a daytime...
You're saying the same thing. I said melodrama.
Okay, we have an agent from the FBI who's coming to a very
small town. Oh, you want to get granular and talk about what's happening.
I guess people understand what Twin Peaks is, but yeah, Special Agent Dale Cooper has come to Twin Peaks to solve the murder of Laura Palmer. And then from there, we learn that, like, oh, small towns. Like, everybody
has a secret.
Everybody's got a secret. You know, it's not just the big city that's weird. The small towns are where the really weird shit happens. And then we start getting into, like, supernatural spiritual stuff involving dreams and backwards talking.
And there's like another plane.
And entities and spirits.
With lots of curtains.
And no better example of how weird that can be than this goddamn movie.
Yeah.
You were maybe what? 3 minutes into this movie before we got the first what? Like the first audible gasp from Kim.
Not gonna lie to you, the first 15 minutes of the movie, I was not on board.
But you get a great explainer in the beginning of
Laura
the movie.
Laura won me back, I gotta tell you. Laura was like, I was on side with Laura. Everything else, like, I.
So we get maybe one of the weirdest moments of the movie right up top. And we're not dealing with Agent Cooper. We've still got David Lynch as an FBI agent. Gordon Cole on the phone calling guys in. Meet me in Oregon, you know. And like we're at the airport and there's this cryptic fucking scene with a woman in a red dress.
It's his niece. Why doesn't he just say
Kim,
niece?
It's not his niece.
It's my sister's daughter's wife.
It's my brother's. Yeah, it's my brother's sister's gal, I think is what he says, right? And she's doing all this weird shit.
She's squinting. She's like tapping her feet.
She's making a fist and releasing it and walking around in circles. She's wearing a blue rose. And Kiefer Sutherland's there, and he's like, what the fuck is going on?
That's my biggest issue, though, is no characters go, what the fuck is going on? Okay, everybody's just looking silently and profoundly at things that are just crazy.
I think at this point, because he's worked with Gordon Cole, the Kiefer Sutherland's character is familiar with his weird practices.
Everybody has weird practices in this show. And is everybody familiar with everybody's weird practices?
Is it just the FBI that's weird? Or is it everybody?
It's everybody.
It's everybody? Yeah, okay. Well, I think that is a fun little scene because you finally get... This is the one time in anything David Lynch has done, including interviews with journalists, where you get some sort of explanation as to what's going on.
Well,
right?
Yeah, because it's basically like this crypto code.
Yeah.
I don't know why she's conveying it via dance.
I don't know.
But it's like the squints mean this and the stompy feet mean this and the hand in the pocket means this. And then there's the blue rose, but
well,
I won't
tell
you
about
what
the blue
means.
Rose. But the best part is that like 20 minutes later, Kiefer Sutherland's like, you're going back to the trailer park for that blue rose, right? And you're like, he figured it out?
You're like, how? When did he knows about the rose. And then, okay, so they're solving this murder that happened a year before.
Yeah.
Laura Palmer's murder. And they have similar circumstances. I think.
Oh, yeah, they do.
They share a ring.
There's more than that.
Okay, John, we'll get there, I guess.
God damn it, Kim.
But then, so the agent we're following in the past disappears off camera. And then I think David Lynch tells us, he's just like, oh, yeah, he's gone now. And then Kiefer Sutherland is also gone because I guess we don't need him anymore. And then it's a year ahead and we're just like, no more FBI. We'll talk to Cooper for like 5 minutes because we have to have some Cooper FaceTime in this. But then it's just Laura Palmer's story. And that's where I'm bought and sold. Like, I am all on board there. But the beginning, I'm like, what is happening?
What's that line from Shakespeare? Like, the past is prologue, you know? Like, it's all just leading
this movie
in.
Is a prologue. What are you talking about?
And it's got a prologue in the prologue. I don't understand why you can't follow this. Kim, there's prologue that's not even in this movie. Like the Blue Rose Task Force has a very long history that I don't want to get into.
Another thing.
Yeah.
David Bowie is in this movie.
David Bowie's in this movie.
Very briefly.
How'd you feel about David Bowie,
so
Kim?
He flies in with his like blustery summer suit. I don't even know what he says, but he says something and then everybody has like a waking nightmare and then he just disappears from the room, like actually like vaporizes.
So he comes in and they're asking him like, hey Philip, good to see you. Where the hell you been?
It's Philip Jeffries. Have you seen Philip Jeffries, Cooper?
Yeah. And he's like, we're not gonna talk about Judy. Like that's like his only line of dialogue in the movie. And then,
oh yeah,
I don't think you noticed
that
because at the end of the movie there's
the monkey says Judy.
The monkey takes off the mask and is like, Judy? And then you were like, what the fuck? I'm like, Kim, we're not gonna talk about Judy. And I did not get any laughs, and I don't appreciate that. I thought that was comedic gold.
Oh, man. Does Judy come up in anything?
Yeah.
In The Return?
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah? No, she does. The entity Judy is around. Philip Jeffries is back, but he's now like a giant orb. mostly because...
Oh, yeah, and then the little person that's in the Black Lodge, doesn't he become a tree with like a piece of gum on
it? He becomes like a nervous system. Yeah, no, 100%.
Otherwise known as a tree with a piece of gum on it.
Okay, fine, yeah, sure. It does kind of look a little bit like a tree with a piece of gum on it. But yeah, he's like, I'm the arm, and I go, ooh. Actual line from this movie that I think is a 5-star masterpiece.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, no, so the David Bowie thing, I don't get it. I don't know why it's in here. It doesn't make sense to me.
Maybe that's a precursor to this other detective going missing?
So I think, because now you've seen Twin Peaks: The Return, you kind of you totally understand the whole idea of, like, at the end of season 2, Agent Cooper gets locked in the lodge. He becomes possessed by Bob.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've got, like, the good Cooper is in the lodge, and there's a bad Cooper somewhere else. I think the same thing happened to Philip Jeffries. Maybe not the exact same thing, but he's been missing for years.
So I'm just having this thought now, and this could be completely wrong, but so that's kind of cyclical with, like, the detective with the girl that dies in the beginning of this movie.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then also Cooper with Laura. So is it like they are a yin to a yang? Like, the girl dies, the FBI agent investigates, gets way too deep and emotionally connected to the girl,
yeah,
and then it consumes him and he disappears.
Absolutely. He disappears into the case. He disappears into himself. Like, if we're trying to find, like, a one-to-one comparison in the real world, then that's exactly what I think it is. It's like this, it becomes all-consuming. He gets sucked in, and for all intents and purposes, he's gone. Like, it's that classic detective trope where, you know, this is the one that got away and I was never able to solve it, and it ruined my marriage and it ruined every friendship that I have. Like, I think that's just kind of what this is.
Mm-hmm.
The same way that characters in like Leland Palmer here, who is he's literally the person who is responsible for the death of his daughter.
He's doing great work in this also. Like,
incredible.
Just like a seedy character all around, and like doing that like painted on smile stuff.
Right?
Like, very, very good.
Ray Wise is amazing.
Committed, because I bet he did not know that this was going to be required of that character when they started.
Yeah, he's super weird in the TV show, but he is...
Unhinged,
haunting in this.
Yes.
Where you, because, like, he is possessed by Bob. We all know this by the time we're watching Fire Walk With Me. Possessed, quote unquote, you know, like.
That's the confusing part about this, because there are some blurred lines between, like, what Bob knows and what Dad knows, and
yeah,
vice versa.
Well, there's, like, times where Dad sort of, like, takes the driver's seat, and even Laura can recognize that, and he's so overcome with sadness for what he's done to his daughter, and then she can recognize that it's him, and they have a moment together. Like, they both know that it's not his fault that's what's happening, which I find very fascinating.
It's very complicated.
It is very complicated. But I think this is something that you see in a lot of David Lynch's stuff, where people can do horrible things and then pretend like somebody else did it. And then he just sort of, like, takes that to the weirdest degree, where they are actually different people. Like, Lost Highway is a great example for that. Like, that guy, you know, it probably definitely kills his wife, and then is suddenly... a 18, 19-year-old kid. Like, he just becomes somebody else. Like, the way that, you know, you would see somebody commit murder, like a high-profile crime, and then go on trial and be charming and sympathetic. Like, they definitely didn't have anything to do with it, but we all definitely know that they did. Like,
mm-hmm.
There is a split personality there, and it's almost as though two people exist inside this person.
Yeah.
Like, I love that, how he takes all of these sort of, like, standard true crime, soap opera, real life murder tropes or patterns, and then it just turns them into these weird nightmarish dream logic things.
Yeah, it is kind of fun, especially that, like, this show was packaged into and as something for the masses, and
mm-hmm.
the fact that so many people watch this supernatural weird shit
yeah,
just tickles me.
Uh-huh.
Ready to shoot your shot? Log into BetMGM every day and play the new Fast Break basketball game for your chance to win prizes. All you need to do is log into BetMGM, head to the promotions page, and fire up Fast Break to find yourself on the b-ball court ready to make a play. Choose to pass the ball to the shooting guard or small forward, or take it to the rim yourself and go for a slam dunk. If you score a basket, you'll win a prize like a boost token, $50 bonus bet, or bonus spins. If you miss, just log in tomorrow and try again. Play Fast Break for your daily shot at boost tokens, bonus bets, or bonus spins. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus. This U.S. promo offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER throughout U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. Or visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.
What the fuck is the Black Lodge, John?
Who knows?
Like, and so the end of the movie, they like pay the Black Lodge.
The Black Lodge feeds on pain and sorrow. Garmonbozia.
But it seems like the one-armed man didn't want this particular murder to happen because he was trying to stop it. Yeah. But then once it happens, everybody is called to the like formal meeting, the formal wrap-up meeting. Like, even Leland is there. Bob pulls some sadness out of Leland and throws it on the ground.
Oh,
and then
fuck,
the Black Lodge
so
like eats it. And then everybody's like, good stuff. And then it's over.
Yeah. So like Mike, the one-armed guy. So the character who speaks backwards inside the, well, I guess everybody speaks backwards inside the lodge, but like, you know, the Let's Rock guy who becomes like a nervous system that's a bunch of sticks with gum on it in The Return is the arm, like quite literally the arm that's missing on Mike.
Listening to this without context,
I don't like talking about any of this.
Gonna fuck somebody up, or they're just gonna like.
It sounds so stupid. And like you can never sell somebody on watching this by trying to explain what it is, because it sounds so stupid.
Honestly, it took me like 10 years to get into Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
I watched the first season, maybe pre you, I can't recall, but you were like, no, you gotta watch it. Oh. And yeah. I was like, I don't know, man.
This is too much.
Yeah, like I needed to microdose it.
And like there are parts of it that I don't necessarily love also, especially in that second season.
No, I do love it. I love it all.
Yeah, it's...
I don't understand most of it.
I don't either.
But some stuff, honestly, John, feels like trolling.
Maybe.
Like the monkey and the gobble, gobble, gobble.
Also, like, she's lost, man. There are so many weird things in this movie. So, like, I feel like a turkey that's lost in the corn. And then there's that whole sequence where the one-armed man is chasing down her dad while she's in the car with him. And he's like, I had all the corn and it was supposed to be canned. You're like, what the fuck is this about?
Oh, yeah.
And then at the end,
what
when they're in the
scene?
Lodge, he's like slurping up creamed corn from a spoon. Like, I don't know. You know the best part? I gotta tell you, I feel like this is the way to watch this movie. Like, either you need to be completely sleep deprived, like stay awake for 36 hours, or do what I did and donate an entire Pepsi liter bottle of plasma. Like, we went to go to donate plasma today. I still feel weird about it.
John had a yawn before we started recording, and I swear to God, he almost fell over.
And I was like, oh, yeah, like I feel like I'm mainline in the universe while watching this movie right now. And I still have no answers.
I feel like if you even sniffed a beer right now, you would get wasted.
I mean, probably. I'm just here on sheer willpower. But
like, they didn't want my blood. I tried.
But that is one of the things that I love about David Lynch's stuff, and especially Fire Walk With Me, because I've seen this a bunch of times. I don't understand it, and it's some of the only stuff that I might never understand that I'm fine with. Like, when I watch it, it feels like it makes sense. It doesn't make sense. It just it feels like it does. Okay. And there are parts of it that just like tickle a weird part in my brain, like that scene where Laura is given the painting of the empty room.
That empty room shit? Like, I do yeah. not understand why she was given it. I do not understand why she put it up.
But aren't you scared of it?
Terrified. Terrified. Everything about it. And then when she's in her bed and she kind of goes into it and we're walking in through the doorway in the halls and stuff, and that lady is there just like pointing her onwards.
It is.
I was like, no.
It is hard to explain how it works, but the way it is cut together is so brilliant.
And then there's another moment where she's like looking out the door of her bedroom and she looks back and she's at the door of the painting and you're just like, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's in the painting and it leads to the Black Lodge. It's insane.
And there's that little kid who definitely just looks like baby David Lynch.
Kid? And why is he wearing that mask?
I don't know. Maybe it's Gordon Cole from the past. I have no idea. It's the man with no face, you know.
Who's the man with no face?
It's the kid who's wearing the mask. And then you're like, yeah, he'll take off the mask and it's the monkey. And then sometimes it's not. And I don't have answers for you. Okay.
Is that some Schrodinger's cat thing?
So I'll say this. I love picking apart this mystery.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I don't ever want to solve it.
Yeah.
And like, I have a book in our house right now that is written by Mark Frost that details everything about Twin Peaks. And it like goes back to the settler times and like what was happening on the land and like why this specific area have like there are like it's a spiritual center and there's
so it's
energy.
A pet cemetery.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. But like there's that whole area in the woods that they deal with in the second half of the movie. And then there's like also the government experiments that are happening in the area, which they do tie into the show a little bit. But like I started reading that book and I didn't like getting all of the
answers.
I'm gonna
read the shit out of that book.
I don't want the answers, you know? I just want to keep picking at this scab. Mm,
yeah, no, I get that. I get that vibe from all of David Lynch's stuff.
Yeah.
It feels like you're just given 300 different threads, and then some of them start braiding,
yes.
But then there's a bunch of other ones, and you're like, why did you even give me these threads? You know I want to tie them.
some of that comes, unfortunately, from they shot a lot of footage for this movie,
mm-hmm.
and there's a special feature that comes with the box set. Like, we just got that box set, that Z to A box set. It's got everything, you know, like it's got the entire show, it's got Fire Walk With Me, it's got countless hours of special features, and I'm gonna watch them.
It costs more than our trip to Costco today.
Okay, well, it's an investment in our future, okay? And also, it's a business expense. We're here on the podcast talking about it, okay?
We sure are turning
it into work. But yeah, like there's a whole bunch of deleted scenes from this movie called The Missing Pieces, and there's like a fan edit that you can watch that I think people call the Blue Rose Cut that really adds a lot of extra info.
Ooh,
in.
A fan edit?
I think it might possibly explain that weird cement room inside
oh.
the
oh,
diner.
Yeah.
Where there's just a guy.
Was that the office?
I don't know.
Were they just trying to justify that he wanted electricity in the scene? So they just had some random guy like fucking with a light bulb?
Yeah. No explanation for it. Have no idea why they're talking to this guy. It's clearly like a real person that they just yanked off the sidewalk to spit a few lines of dialogue. And yeah, the whole time we're at this diner, there's just like these bright white shots of electricity coming from a cement room in the back for no reason. And I love it.
I feel like I've already lost a lot of this movie because you say things like that. And I'm like, this movie really was so weird.
Like, what is up with all the electricity, man? Like,
I love the electricity.
So do I.
I don't get it, but I like it.
No, and it is all throughout Twin Peaks The Return.
I think you gotta jump to the next spot, like to get to...
That's the information highway?
Yeah, like to get to and from the Black Lodge, you gotta like surf on some electrodes.
I mean, maybe.
What was the deal with the trailer?
Oh, like the trailer park?
Yeah, no, but specifically that one trailer at the trailer park that I'm assuming the FBI agent disappeared in because the trailer disappeared.
So I think he may have disappeared into the Black Lodge. He's definitely somewhere because it was after he found the ring. And like we know that the ring sort of like connects people to the Black Lodge.
I'm asking about the trailer.
And he found the ring underneath the trailer.
Did he? Underneath it?
Yeah, that's why he went over there. Something was like drawing his attention over there. And then like they've been looking for this ring. They've been looking for Teresa Banks's ring. And it was on a mound of dirt underneath that trailer. And in that trailer is the old lady and the little kid. We never see.
Oh!
Yeah! That's right. We're solving it tonight, guys.
Okay. Okay. So I think they're like Sherpas then.
Kinda. I mean, they do seem to be calling people to the Black Lodge or warning people about things. Because, like, ultimately in this movie, what we really learn at the end is. Oh, it's complicated, right? Like, because, there's also that line of dialogue that where they're talking about falling in space and about how you just keep going faster and faster until eventually you just burn forever. And there are no angels, like all the guardian angels are gone and there's no one there to save you.
Mm-hmm. And the log lady does say that, like, she puts her hand on her forehead and she's like, you're on a path to darkness.
Yeah. There's or some shit. One, there's no, the path you're on is very hard to turn back from, mm-hmm. I think is what she says.
Quit fucking up. You're about to find out.
I know. It's like the most cryptic weirdo version of just like, there's nothing open past 11 but hospitals and legs. Go home, girl.
Don't open up a beer, open up a Bible.
Exactly. But like at the end of the movie, there's a lot of angel imagery. And it's real sad because Laura is being kidnapped with her friend. Is it Audrey?
It's not Audrey.
No, it's Renette. Renette. Sorry, like, not Audrey. There's a lot of names swirling around. We visit a lot of
Audrey
characters.
Audrey isn't even in this.
No, she's not.
Sad about it.
There's no real reason for her to be here, but it would have been great.
She could have done a dance.
She could have done a dance. Yeah. Anyway, so her and Ronette are the ones that get kidnapped, kind of a kid by Theo and Jacques, but then like her dad comes in and takes them to like a railway
car. Wow, you even
car.
Know like the rapey guy's names.
He's French Canadian. But yeah, like
but he's a bad dude.
He is a bad dude. They're all bad dudes.
I just don't. I'm not on first name basis with them.
I've watched the show a couple times.
Okay, carry on. I'm sorry to
interrupt.
Anyway,
yeah. So like they get kidnapped and there's this really sad moment where Ronette is. At first, you think she's talking to Laura, just like, if I die, please look at me. Like it's like, oh, what the fuck are you saying? That's horrific, right? But she,
I thought she was doing some weird delusional prayer.
She is. I think so.
Yeah.
Because then a guardian angel shows up. And, like, all of a sudden...
Zaps her wrist bandage.
Yeah, and then, you know, like, her dad, you know, punches her and knocks her out of the train car, and then he thinks she's dead, so he just kind of, like, leaves her there. But that's essentially what frees her. And it's really fucking sad in that moment, because, like, you know that there are no guardian angels for Laura Palmer.
Because it left her painting in her bedroom.
Yeah, that's right! She's got a painting!
It abandoned her! She was like...
Yes.
Because she was being bad.
There was a painting with a guardian angel in it, and the guardian angel just disappears from the painting. The same way that mom wakes up from a nightmare, and there's just a horse in the room.
That's because dad drugged her milk. That is not anything supernatural.
Oh, that's the worst, right? Where she's just like, yeah, sure, I'll drink this milk. And he's like, bup, 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 bup. You won't finish that whole glass.
That's a lot.
Fall asleep reading your Learn How to Speak German book.
Oh, that killed me. So, that's a funny scene I want to point out, is that, like, the arrival of Bob is marked by turning on the fan in the hallway.
He's under the fan right now, yeah. It's electricity, Kim. Like, she hears the electricity whirring. I don't know. But yeah, it's real sad at the end of the movie. But, so the reason I'm bringing all that up is because, like, in the final moments of the movie, like, we learn, essentially, that this was an effort to save Laura Palmer. that, like, as horrific as it is, and, like, has they are saving her from an already bad life where everything has gone wrong for her. Like, she's being abused by her father. She's been abused by her father for years.
Mm-hmm. Since she was 12.
Since she was 12, yeah. Like, she... It's almost like in this movie, she's finally realizing that it's her dad that's doing it. Like, mm-hmm. it's always been this entity, Bob. But she's only finally seeing Bob as her father, which is very interesting.
And it's still arguable as to, like, well, I guess Bob does possess Agent Dale Cooper, but Dad in this is, like, possessed at times, and sometimes you see Bob in there, and sometimes you're like, how much of this is Dad? Like, mm-hmm. it's a very, like, creepy tightrope.
Yeah, I mean, in the show, in the movie, they really sort of, like, put a nail in it by saying that, like, he didn't actually do any of this. It was Bob making him do it. Now, in the real world, you know, when you live without all of the Black Lodge weirdness, he is a man who is doing awful shit to
his like,
daughter.
I'm sure we're not leaving Bob's DNA.
No, but nobody's putting handcuffs on Bob, you know. But Bob's intention was to possess Laura Palmer. Like, they were just going to make her life even worse. Mm. Like, she's already on a bad path, and it's going to go even further down the drain. And as cruel and as awful as it is, it was an act of mercy, and like, her guardian angel was still actually there with her by getting him to kill her instead of possessing her. And I'm unclear about exactly why that happens. Something to do with Ronette and, like, letting Ronette leave. Like, there's some like, the original plan, like, they talk about it in the show, is was to
I'm here
yeah, was to possess Laura. Like, she was ultimately going to be the person that they possessed, and I think that's also why they're doing all this awful shit to her, so they can get her to a point where they can possess her, mm-hmm. take her over. But he gets confused or something happens, and he kills her instead. And, like, the interesting thing about the Ronette stuff...
Do you think maybe it's her dad in that moment killing her, or not
I've
Bob?
Thought about that. I have thought about that a lot. And
because I think Dad in this movie too is realizing that he is Bob, like,
yeah,
as much as Laura is finding out that, like, there's that moment in the car after all that weird stuff happens with One Armed Man where they're at a gas station and they are both, like, having nom flashbacks.
Oh, well, he's having nom flashbacks to when he was hanging out, or, like, when he was seeing
he was trying to, like, see a prostitute, and he went to the door and it was his daughter.
Yeah, because he was just like, hey, let's get a couple other girls in here, and one of them's his fucking daughter, and then it just, like, fractures his fucking brain. Obviously, I mean, it would. Yeah, that's an interesting moment. There's a really haunting scene in the show, actually, where he talks about when he sees Bob for the first time. And it's when he's, like, 12, I think. And it's just like...
In the show?
Yeah.
I don't remember
it's
this.
Like, it's, I think it's like they're at a cottage, or they're with friends or something. And it's like, obviously, just like something bad happens to him and it fucks him up forever. But it's like, yeah, I think he talks about him coming through the window as well. Like, it's really scary shit.
What is Bob, though?
He's bad.
What is Bob? Is Bob from the Black Lodge?
I think he is.
Is Bob like a Beetlejuice? Is he like a rogue agent that's not working with the team?
Now.
And then he has to, like, pay his dues, like, throw some blood on the floor of the Black Lodge, and then just he gets to keep being an independent agent of bad? Like.
Yeah, kind of. Like, I think this is always tricky. I mean, like, the problem with all this stuff is, like, you ask me again in a year, I'm going to have a different opinion.
Yeah, I guess it's
but, like, Bob
too,
is evil.
Like, it's all just context. Like, if it makes sense to you, just call him a demon.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like, the Black Lodge is kind of like this in-between
purgatory.
Space.
Purgatory?
Yeah, it's like purgatory. It's like maybe, like, the energy center where all things come from.
Maybe it's like the check-in lobby, like, at the hotel.
Man, you've said this a bunch of times too, and, like, how you talk about how the Roadhouse is a check-in lobby or a Black Lodge for the show, which I thought was a fucking genius observation, especially
because you get to see, like, the cast of characters, like, it's like an overture.
Yeah.
But you get it, like, normally at the end of the show, but it's fun. It's like you get to hang out with the characters and there's no story happening.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes there is, but it's like, oh man.
Not in The Return. The Return has very little story in those scenes.
There's some, and there's actually a scene in The Return I think about constantly with, I wish I could remember the actress's name, but she's in Knocked Up, and she's like one of the stoner's girlfriends, and she's like, You're pregnant, huh? I bet when you eat, like, your baby eats your food, but you guys can't get mad at each other because
you're family. You're like family.
Yeah, you remember this? Yeah, so she's in it, and she has a weird scene where she's just, like, crawling through the audience while a band is playing, and then she just lets out this shrill, horrible scream, which seems very similar to what Laura's doing.
Laura's got a good scream.
Laura's got an incredible scream. But like when she goes to the Roadhouse in this movie and she's crying, listening to the band play. It's just like we are just seeing more girls in the same awful spots. And like they just keep getting eaten by this like invisible machine.
I don't like that.
That is the thing that I always think about with Twin Peaks. It's just like it's like there is a monster out there that is insatiable and we can't stop it. Like the more you see it happen across Dateline NBC every week, like all day, every day, all year, you're just like there has to be some sort of thing that we're feeding these girls.
Well, and
to.
Then it's true. It's like happening right under your nose. Like it's happening in this bar.
Yeah.
It's happening in this bar that you drink at on Friday nights and listen to your band. Like there's something happening to the girl in the corner and you don't even see it.
Exactly. This is the way station where everybody sort of like meets up, gathers some energy, and then splits off into different areas. Like I'm just taking your example.
That's fine.
And expanding on it a little bit. But yeah, I think the Roadhouse sequence is probably my favorite sequence of the movie. It's like it's the scene that I like just like let's just turn the volume fucking up max the whole time.
When she's like just sad and listening, or when her and...
No, the next sequence where it gets weird and gross. Not because it's weird and gross, but just be like we have this one band in the corner. There's like a red floodlights everywhere. They're playing the same fucking song over and over and over again.
This is
hypnotic.
Not the Roadhouse. This is like Roadhouse XXX.
Okay, yeah, it's the back door of the Roadhouse. Yeah, I mean, like it's gross and weird and all that stuff. But I mean, like if I went to a normal party there, great vibe. Like, great vibe. As long as everybody's IDs are getting checked at the door, great vibe.
Yeah, you're going to backtrack this.
I love how loud it is, and I love how you can't hear anybody talking, and I love that band, I love what they're playing, and I love the strobe lighty effects of it all.
I like the shoe sounds in the Black Lodge.
You sure do.
Especially Agent Dale Cooper's.
Uh-huh. There's a lot of clip-cloppy happening there.
Does the horse ever appear in the Black Lodge?
I think the horse...
I feel like the horse would look really good in there.
I think the horse is in the show somewhere. I don't know if he's in the Black Lodge. That's a great question. I mean, probably. We're going to find out. We've got the entirety of Twin Peaks on Blu-ray
now. I don't
know
if I'm ready.
I'm ready. I'm not going to bed tonight.
I feel like we just watched it.
Kinda. What do you think the horse represents? Like, is the horse... Like
the horse doesn't represent anything. The mom has been drugged.
Oh,
it's just
on.
To signify that she has been drugged.
No, mom gets transmissions from the Black Lodge all the time. What are you talking about? You think it represents death? You think it's a pale horse?
Oh, yeah, I guess.
David Lynch is not interested in seeing a Grim Reaper, but a horse. Absolutely.
Hey. That was the horse. As David Lynch.
What? Oh man, yeah, so this is the tone we're setting for this season of the podcast. We're coming in hot. We're a little loopy.
Speak for yourself.
I'm a little loopy. Kim's doing great. And yeah, we've got a lot of fun movies planned for you. We've got most of the season recorded already. We're recording this one real late in the batch. But we are doing something a little different this season on the show.
Yeah, so instead of a double feature, we are giving you a whole season. We're trying to do, I think, 13 episodes.
Yep.
And they are all going to have the same theme, but that theme is secret. And if you guess what it is, you can enter to win a t-shirt, a prize pack, and if we get a bunch of people who are able to guess it, then we'll do some draws as well.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be super fun. You have to guess based on the movies that we drop every week.
Absolutely. Every single movie that we talk about is going to have some sort of connective tissue. issue. Your first clue to what that secret theme is Firewalk With Me. And then I don't think, what can you pull from Firewalk With Me? It could be anything.
Like, is it a horse? Is it a monkey?
We could start the season with Firewalk With Me. We could just pull 12 other movies from a hat and be like, guess what? They're all connected. And here's why. Like, you could come up with bullshit reasons how they're all connected somehow if Twin Peaks is the Rosetta Stone for it. But there is a link in the episode description right now for you to submit your prediction. You can do it whenever you want. Bold of you to try and make a prediction after this week's episode. But if you think you've got what the secret theme is, send us your answer. And yeah, first person to get it right is going to win a Nightmare on Film Street prize pack. And we're going to have some runner-ups that we'll pull at random for other people that predict the theme correctly.
We'll be back again next week. We've got a whole new season for you. So stick around, subscribe if you haven't already, and maybe join us on Patreon if you want to support the show at nofspodcast.com/fiendclub for even more bonus episodes and content.
Oh yeah, we got hundreds of hours of episodes over there. We're still putting out new stuff. But we'll be back again next week with another clue to the secret theme. And until then, I'm John.
I'm Kimmy.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
Is the monkey in The Return?
I don't remember. He is definitely in that short film that David Lynch made, like,
yeah,
What Did Jack Do, where he's interrogating
the
monkey.
But is that related to Twin Peaks?
It's all connected!
Do you like horror movies? Do you like cocktails? Do you like cocktails while you watch horror movies?
Oh boy, do we have a surprise for you. Cocktails from the Crypt is finally here. You can get a copy of our new recipe book, 60 Terrifying Concoctions, inspired by your favorite horror movies, right now, wherever books are sold.
Learn how to make the Drag Mai Tai to Hell, the Negroni Nomicon.
Surprise your friends with a Jason X-inspired slushy.
Get sloshed drinking a Texas Chainsaw Margarita, or six.
And why not blow your brains at the back of your head with the Killbot Kamikaze? Thank you. Have a nice day.
You can learn how to drink... You can learn how to make these drinks and more in Cocktails from the Crypt, available wherever books are sold, like Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Okay, this infomercial bit has been really fun, but seriously, one, thank you so much to everybody who has pre-ordered a copy of Cocktails from the Crypt. And if you are looking for a gift for the horror person in your life and you have no idea what else to get them, Cocktails from the Crypt is here to help them punch up every Friday movie night and turn it into a graveyard smash.
Plus, the cover's embossed and it looks great on your coffee table.
No, oh, Kim's still stuck in infomercial land, guys. I'm sorry. I think she's gone forever.
It's purple.
You can get Cocktails from the Crypt right now, wherever books are sold. Or you can head over to nofspodcast.com/go. There's links for everything.
Ready to shoot your shot? Log into BetMGM every day and play the new Fast Break basketball game for your chance to win prizes. All you need to do is log into BetMGM, head to the promotions page, and fire up Fast Break to find yourself on the b-ball court ready to make a play. Choose to pass the ball to the shooting guard or small forward, or take it to the rim yourself and go for a slam dunk. If you score a basket, you'll win a prize like a boost token, $50 bonus bet, or bonus spins. If you miss, just log in tomorrow and try again. Play Fast Break for your daily shot at boost tokens, bonus bets, or bonus spins. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21+. Plus, this U.S. promo offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER throughout U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona, 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts, 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico, or visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Geico makes it easy to get affordable renter's insurance in as little as 90 seconds. And then you'll start to wonder why everything else isn't so fast. Like, why does it take so long to do the dishes? A meal that's gone in 3 requires 45 minutes worth of dishes. Doesn't make sense. But it does make sense to get renter's insurance through GEICO. That way, that pile of dirty dishes and the other things you love are covered. Get more with GEICO.